If you turn over your page or open your gospel, whichever you prefer, we begin with, there's only two scenes to look at tonight. The first is Matthew chapter 1, verses 1 to 17. As you can see, it's a genealogy, and to read it would be a bit hard, I imagine. And it's simply taking us through the story of Jesus. Perhaps I should read it. May I? I will in that case, because it's part of the text. So I'll read down there. As I do read it, before I read it, I want you to be alert that it can't possibly be accurate. There's no need for it to be accurate. In fact, there is another genealogy of Jesus we find in Luke's Gospel. I've put it there on the right-hand side. It's quite, if not entirely, different. They're both genealogies that end up with Joseph, and they both start with Abraham. The one we're going to give tonight, which is Matthew's text, starts, verse 1, an account of the genealogy of Jesus, the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. What Matthew wants to say in giving us this genealogy, which was no doubt the best he could find out from the sources available to him, was that truth, that Jesus is the one in whom the promises made to Abraham are fulfilled. And he's the one, according to the faith of the community, who is the one in whom the promises made to David are fulfilled. That's what he wants to say. And central to it is the name David. You'll notice that there are 42 names in that list, three lots of 14. There are 14 from Abraham down to King David. He's had to leave out three people's names to get 14, so it's a contrivance. He's contriving to get 14. There's 14 from David down to the deportation of Babylon, and there's 14 from there down to Jesus. In fact, if you look at the bottom, the very last verse, 17, makes this exact point. All generations from Abraham to David are 14, and from David to the deportation to Babylon, 14. And from the deportation of Babylon to the Messiah, 14 generations. Why go to so much trouble? Why shape it like that? Answer, simple. Hebrew does not have numbers. Hebrew uses letters for numbers. So D, the fourth letter in Hebrew alphabet, as in the English alphabet, is worth 4. V happens to be, unlike English, the sixth letter in the Hebrew alphabet. So the consonants, and Hebrew is a consonantal language, D, V, D is 4 plus 6 plus 4, 14. What's your maths like? The 14 is David. David, David, David. Others suggest as well, you have 3 14s is 6 7s, isn't it? And 7 is the fullness number, perhaps, is also got in mind. The completion, the whole 6 7s complete, and Jesus begins the 7th 7, the perfection. So we're dealing with numbers played with like a child would, to make our points, not to give historical accuracy. As you read through it, you'll notice on the right-hand side, Luke has the same, basically, from Abraham down to David. But after that, Luke's genealogy goes through a younger son, not Solomon, but Nathan, and traces right through from Nathan down to Joseph by another line. They can't both be right. Matthew follows the kingly line right through from Solomon, and you can find all the information. I've got it in the footnotes in the Bible. For the last part from the Babylonian captivity, we don't know where their sources were. They're from Hellenistic genealogies, which are not available to us, but were available to Matthew and Luke writing independently. So let's go back to it a bit. There's more depth into it than that, though. So, following it through, we'll look firstly at Abraham. By beginning with Abraham, Matthew wants to set the scene for Jesus, the founder of the Jewish people, but also the one through whom the promise was made for many nations. So already in the very opening word, you have Jewish and Gentile communities brought together. That is the promise made to Abram, as recorded in the book of Genesis. Yahweh said to Abram, "Leave your country, your people, your father's house, and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I'll make your name great, and you'll be a blessing. I'll bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will bless themselves by you." A great nation, the Jewish people, through whom all peoples on earth will bless themselves. Matthew's gospel will end with sending them to all the nations of the earth to take the faith. The promise made to David, two texts. First from the first book of Chronicles, chapter 7, verse 11 to 14. "When your days are fulfilled," David, "when your days are fulfilled to go to you, go up to your, be with your ancestors, I will raise up your offspring after you, one of your own sons, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for me, and I will establish his throne forever. I'll be a father to him. He shall be a son to me. I will not take my steadfast love from him as I took it from the one before you," that's King Saul, "but I will confirm him in my house and in my kingdom forever, and his throne will be established forever." That's the promise that held the Jewish people, no doubt still does. One of the promises that held them together. And you might recall that was true. Solomon did take over from David. But some 400 years later, the last king mentioned in our list, Jeconiah, at the time of the Babylonian exile, was taken into exile and did not return, and the king faded out, and there was no king in Judah from 587, 598, right through till today. What happened to that promise? Matthew wants to say to his community, the promise still holds, because Abram was the father of Isaac, Isaac the father of Jacob, Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers, Judah father of Perez and Terah by Tamar. We'll come back to the women later, they're very important in this genealogy. Perez was the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Aram. Aram was the father of Amminadab, Amminadab the father of Nahshon. Nahshon the father of Salmon, and Salmon the father of Boaz by Rahab. Boaz was the father of Obed by Ruth. Obed the father of Jesse, and Jesse was the father of King David. David was the father of Solomon by the wife of Uriah. Solomon was the father of Rehoboam, Rehoboam the father of Abijah, Abijah the father of Asaph, Asaph the father of Jehoshaphat, and Jehoshaphat the father of Joram. Joram was the father of Uzziah, and Uzziah the father of Jotam. Jotam the father of Ahaz, and Ahaz the father of Hezekiah. Hezekiah was the father of Manasseh, and Manasseh the father of Amos. Amos the father of Josiah. Josiah the father of Jeconiah and brothers at the time of the deportation to Babylon. All of those characters you can find mentioned in the books of the Old Testament. The rest, apart from Zerubbabel, are unnamed. after the deportation. So he's telling us that this was the history. We know this history, but the history went on, and the promise went on, has been fulfilled in this. After the deportation to Babylon, Jeconiah was the father of Salaltiel, and Salaltiel of Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel, the father of Abiud, and Abiud, the father of Eliakim. Eliakim was the father of Atzor, and Atzor, the father of Zadok. Zadok, the father of Achim, and Achim, the father of Eliud, and Eliud, the father of Eleazar. Eleazar, the father of Matan, Matan, the father of Jacob. Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom, that is, of Mary, Jesus was born, who is called the Messiah. So the promise there that we see, Matthew saying, look, the promise is fulfilled in Jesus. Come, be with him. Enjoy the I will be you forever promise of God. This is beautifully expressed often, but I'll just read Psalm 89, verses 20 and the following. I have found my servant David. With my holy oil I have anointed him. My hand shall always remain with him. My arm shall strengthen him. The enemy shall not outwit him. The wicked shall not humble him. I will crush his foes before him and strike down those who hate him. My faithfulness and steadfast love shall be with him. And in my name, his horn, the horn that announces the triumph in battle, will be exalted. He shall cry to me, you are my Father, my God, the rock of my salvation. I will make him the firstborn, the highest of the kings of the earth. Forever I will keep my steadfast love for him, and my covenant with him shall stand firm. I will not remove from him my steadfast love or be false to my faithfulness. His line shall continue forever, and his throne endure before me like the sun. It shall be established forever like the moon, an enduring witness in the sky. The women that are mentioned in that genealogy, the genealogy follows the men, and the point I want to now make is really simple, but very important to understand all of this. The common opinion in the ancient world was that the male seed, like the seed from the trees around us, contained completely human life. And as the seed from a tree is deposited in the soil, which acts as a nurturing matrix, or whatever the right word would be, to hold it and nourish it, but the whole life is in the seed. We know that's wrong. They didn't know that's wrong. They understood that the male placed this life seed, which had the whole human life in it, into the womb of the woman who nurtured it and brought it forth. And so the male's importance, the male was the one who handed on life. It's as simple as that, as they understood it incorrectly. That accounts for a lot of ideas that we find right through the ancient world and its literature. And of course we know it's incorrect, and we have to take account of that incorrectness in our whole way of imagining the relationship between man and woman. It's rare, in fact I think it's unknown, to have women mentioned in a genealogy. There's none in Luke. And as you look here, there are a number mentioned. I've highlighted them. Tamar. She was probably a Canaanite, not a Jew. She also had those two boys, Perez and Zerah, by pretending to be a prostitute, a religious prostitute, and enticing her own father-in-law to have a relationship with her from one point of view, if we're going to look at it from the point of view of sexual morality, we might think of that as scandalous. The Bible never does. She's praised. She's praised for it in the book of Ruth and in the book of Chronicles, because her father, Judah, could not have a child. And so she, his daughter-in-law, to ensure the line continued, went through this ruse. And whatever one thinks of it at one level, at the level of the promise of God, it was seen as heroic and beautiful and outside the norms of normal morality, of their morality and ours. Still, she's praised for this, looking at the wider picture, as it were. But she's not a woman who belongs to the Jewish race. And yet she did this. The next woman, Rahab, you know her story from the book of Joshua. Again, a prostitute. And a woman of a Canaanite city of Jericho. She's part of the line, part of the providence. Matthew's saying something to his community about, what's all this about being a Jew? What's all this about belonging to us? We're talking about something here that God has designs for that are much larger than our morality and much larger than our racist views. Ruth, beautiful story. Hope you've read the book of Ruth. A Moabite woman full of love for a mother-in-law, caring for her. She's the grandmother of King David. Again, a non-Jewish woman. The wife of Uriah mentioned. Adultery committed by David. And yet, through that adulterous relationship, somehow the mystery of God comes through. In a way, it's putting morality in its right place too, a bit. It's somehow daring to look bigger than we can be, whatever. I don't want to go into a moral theology talk here, and we're not disvaluing all these important things. But the text is saying something bigger than all that even. And if you look through that list of men that we've just said there, there's sin after sin after sin. And Jesus belongs to it. Matthew is saying he's part of us. He's part of our history. The skeletons in our cupboard are in his too. He belongs in a real world where there is sin and there's mistake and there's all of this. But there's also a providence and there's also a faithfulness and there's also a whatever you take out of all that. A God promise that persists through it. Till we get to the last woman, Mary. And the next scene, which we'll move straight to, is rather something totally unexpected and right outside the whole of the biblical history. Because here, Joseph has an important role, because it's through the man that life comes and welcome into the community. And the man says, this is my child, and that makes that child his child, with all the inheritance and all the family and all that belongs in those Near Eastern world. So Joseph gives Jesus a name and a place and a memory and a history. That's his role. The woman Mary here is the mother, and we're going to see in the next scene in a way that's quite beyond our imagining. Matthew wants to make a point that there's a new creation here. There's a new Genesis. In fact, if you go back to chapter 1, verse 1, an account of the genealogy is the translation here in the New Revised Standard Version, which I'm following. They're the first words of Matthew's Gospel. That could be the translation, but the Greek is Biblos Genesios, Genesis. The book, I think I would translate, I'm not pretending to be better than these people, the book of the Genesis of Jesus. It's not just introducing that verse 1, that genealogy. It's talking about the coming to be of Jesus and his mission. It introduces, in fact, the whole, I suggest, of Matthew's gospel. Here we have a new creation, a new Adam, a new way of being human, a new beginning. And let's now go to the beautiful text, the first of the Midrash, which Matthew presents for us, and the only scene we'll now look at tonight.